Live now.
Capital 263.
Hello, viewers. Welcome to yet another exciting show. That's the Road to 2018 Elections. My name is Lovejoy Mtungwiza. I'm your host. And in the studio today, we have Dr. Noah Manyika, who is running, who is the president of Build Zimbabwe Alliance, popularly known as BIZA. You know, they've been making noises. Manyane BIZA. So, tinaro BIZA racho muno munas. Dr. Manyika, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Lovejoy. It's an honor to be here.
All right. To get into the program, and may you just maybe give us a short biograph of yourself?
Well, I was, I'm a Zimbabwean, full-blooded Zimbabwean.
Yeah,
born here, went to school here, and until I got to college level when I left the country, and you know, went to different countries to study, like most people. I came back home, and again, like most people, struggled with some of the things that were going on in our country. We had a lot of hope in 1980. But as you know, something happened along the way. Mm-hmm. And there are many Zimbabweans who ended up leaving the country and spending significant amounts of time outside. And I'm one of those. But at the same time, you know, kumusha kumusha.
And you're back.
Yeah, and I'm back.
And you know, you're back as that horse that... Is it a dark horse or is it just a horse?
No, it's a white horse. It's not a dark horse. You know, it's a horse full of hope and promise and strength and courage. Yeah, no, but yeah, it's really wonderful to be back home and to be part of this new awakening that's there. And I think it's a cross-generational awareness. I think a lot of people are realizing that we have a responsibility to fix our country.
Okay.
No one is going to do it for us. Mm-hmm. We have to do it ourselves.
So let's talk about BZ, Build Zimbabwe Alliance, BZA. What is it about? What does it stand for?
Well,
what necessitated you to come up with this project?
So, you know, over the years, one of the things that has really become a burden for me is the fact that we have so much talent in Zimbabwe. We have so many people who are well qualified to make our country work, to make our companies work, to make our institutions work. People who are well-educated, well-trained, well-exposed. We have a lot of Zimbabweans running some very significant institutions overseas. And then we have some incredible Zimbabweans even here. Even when you go into the informal sector is replete with Zimbabweans who are doing very, very creative things under very, very difficult conditions. We have what it takes to make this a great country. And then you add on top of that all the natural resources that we have. We have what it takes for Zimbabwe not to be where it is right now. Now, the question is, why are we not there? you know, and when you look at it, part of the problem is that even some of the political formations which are there, you know, people look at these political formations and the political culture in our country, and they say, you know what, I am not even going to bother trying to get into politics because, you know, it's really not about solving the problems of the country. So we started really seriously thinking about a platform for all those Zimbabweans who really want to bring about change. And, you know, can we provide that platform for somebody who has never been in politics, but who says, you know what, I truly believe that I could be the best councillor in my community. I could be the best MP in my community. And you verify that. So you offer them a political platform, you know, to actually do that. And that's what the Build Zimbabwe Alliance is all about. We are there to ensure that there is an unprecedented mobilization of Zimbabweans everywhere. To be part of determining the direction of our country and rebuilding it. And you know what? You go to some political formations and you're going to be asked, you know, how many years have you spent in the party structures? What has that got to do with your competency? What has that got to do with your ability to deliver services? So the Build Zimbabwe Alliance is about that. You know?
So what we did before we came for this program is we posed a question, some questions to people. And no, in fact, we asked them what they want to ask you.
Yes.
And one of the things that they want to know is, why are you wasting your time? That's what they're saying. Why are you wasting your time participating now in 2018 when you have a chance to participate in 2023?
Yeah, who says we have a chance
to... Okay, fine. This
to,
is the social media guys.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is, who says we have a chance to participate in 2023 if we don't participate in 2018? You know, this idea, and this is something really in our culture which we really have to address. this idea of always postponing your destiny, you know, saying it's not, you're wasting your time. This is not the time yet. Who says it's not the time? It's ZANU-PF, actually, which has been saying it's not the time for the past 37 years. It's not the time. All you guys are too young. You don't have Liberation War credentials. You need to let all those people die first before you actually build your country. And it's really interesting when you hear people saying that, I'm not wasting my time. I'm fighting for my country. And it is worth my time, my resources, and everything that I'm putting into it, and all the other people who are working with me. It's worth our effort and our resources.
Interesting. You recently launched your manifesto. That's over the weekend. Can you take us through that manifesto? What's in it? What's in it for Zimbabweans? What's in it for Zimbabweans in the diaspora?
So, there are two parts to our manifesto. The substantial part, which is the second part, contains our 10-point plan. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that we would do in the event that we are actually elected into office. The first part of it, which is very short, is about making sure that we have an incredible social contract where we choose as Zimbabweans to need each other, where we actually have a commitment to making sure that every Zimbabwean can give their fullest to the rebuilding of our country. So, we're very, very concerned about that issue, the issue of making sure that we have a social contract in Zimbabwe where everyone feels welcome. It doesn't matter that you're from Bulawayo, doesn't matter that you are from Harare, doesn't matter that you are black, you're white, you're Ndebele, you're Shona, doesn't matter that you have your parents maybe migrated from Malawi many, many years ago, but you've always been a citizen, even though lately you were told that you were not. Mm. So the issue of a social contract, a unique social contract where we choose to need each other, is really, really critical for us. So that's part of the work that we've been doing, just making sure that we reach out to all Zimbabweans who are here, Zimbabweans who are in the diaspora. You mentioned, what is in it for the diaspora. One of the things that really, really frustrates me right now is that, since what happened in November happened, there's almost like people are saying, there's an apathy that has even begun to set in some groups. The diaspora needs to be fighting for its right to vote. Mm-hmm. It really does. And I know that we're coming to the end of the registration process. There are all kinds of excuses that have been given about how difficult it is and so on. But remember when you went to register, I hope you did.
I did.
you went in and there was this guy sitting there with a laptop, mm-hmm. and there's this little machine that captures your fingerprints, and then they print you a slip. You can put that thing in a suitcase and you can send it to one of our embassies there, and it doesn't take much for somebody to actually be sitting there and registering Zimbabweans so that they can participate in the process of rebuilding their country. Mm-hmm. And then you hear the excuse, it's expensive. The moment you hear someone in government saying that, they're looking for someone to set aside a huge amount of money so that somebody can actually get something. And so it's not that expensive, and it's time we Zimbabweans refused some of those excuses. So anyway, this social contract, we must have this social contract which says every Zimbabwean is valuable.
Well, let's just leave it there. Is Build Zimbabwe a socialist movement?
Build Zimbabwe, is that our ideology, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Are you based on socialism?
No, we're not based on socialism. We are based on Zimbabweanism. Some of these labels really, don't mean anything, mm-hmm. And I can tell you, I lived in a socialist and communist country for 3 years and people were suffering in that country. And there are capitalist countries where people are suffering as well. So you know what? You have got to develop an ideology which puts the needs of the citizen first. Mm-hmm. And there are elements in every ideology where, the government extends a helping hand to people and so on. There's the elements of welfare. But you have got to unleash the creative potential of your people and harness it and direct it and resource it so that their well-being can actually be catered for.
So in the following, maybe in the next 2-3 weeks or months, we are going to witness a lot of manifestos coming in.
Yes.
And you have just launched yours now. Mm-hmm. And probably people are going to use yours as a template. Mm-hmm. But what's in it that makes it outstanding. That makes it, you know, very different from the rest that, that are going to be coming up.
Well, so here's the thing. I've got to do a bit of a disclaimer here because, you know what, anyone can come up with a manifesto.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know what our country needs, so we can tailor our message to the things that we know that our country needs. The issue is not even the things that we write necessarily, but it's the people who actually affect what you write. So that's why you hear me saying the most important thing that we have in Zimbabwe, that we have to deal with in Zimbabwe, is the leadership problem. If we have the right leaders, then, you know, the ideas that are put out there can be appropriately implemented. But anyway, here are some of the highlights of our manifesto, if you would like to know. Number one, we are committed to making sure that we can totally cut down, radically cut down non-productive public spending. And what does that mean? That means reducing the number of government ministries to 15.
Okay, all right.
And that means eliminating...
We have 22.
It's some progress from what we had before. So eliminating all deputy minister positions because they are pointless, a waste of money. And the office of second vice president, and reducing the size of the legislature to pre-2013 levels. You know, each province right now has an average of, it carries the burden of about 30-something legislators because in addition to the 210 constituency MPs, we have senators, and then we have non-constituency MPs and so on. And if you divide the 300-something legislators by the 10 provinces, there's a burden of over 30. That's ridiculous. So those are some of the things that we would address. So that's point number one in our 10-point plan.
Before you move on to the next one, you talked about removing the office of the second vice president. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
Well, you know, why do we need the office of the second vice president? Listen, there are some things which were translated from ZANU-PF's own internal issues, and then they became national.
National.
Yeah. And then the national, the taxpayer has to carry the burden of the issues that are ZANU-PF issues. Look, there is a difference here between the party called ZANU-PF and the state.
The state, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, whether we like it or not, that's one of the challenges that we've had in our country that we've got to deal with. You know, why do we need a second vice president? You know.
Okay, all right. Maybe you can move on to the next one.
So we'll aggressively promote and defend the constitutional rights and liberties of every Zimbabwean.
Every
without
Zimbabwe,
fear,
even in those in the diaspora. Of,
yes, absolutely. That's really important. You know, if you're going to have a fully functioning democracy where people can give their all to the advancement of your country, they have to feel that they are protected. And, you know, government has to go out of its way to actually protect people, even those people who oppose it. You know, it's your responsibility as a government. And then you create an environment where people can then freely give, and they can give fully of themselves, and they can also become advocates for your country, even outside. So it's really, really critical that we defend aggressively and promote the constitutional rights and liberties of every Zimbabwean without fear or favor.
All right, all right. But how critical, as someone who has stayed in the diaspora for a long time, how critical are the diasporans to the development of the economy?
This is one question that is such an important question, and I'm really glad that you posed it. Every citizen is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Every citizen. Because from their vantage point, there is something that they can do for the nation. You know, actually, if you're talking specifically about the diaspora, that in the past 37 years, really, well, you know, maybe starting 10 years into independence, you know, the past two decades and something, they are the ones who have really kept this country going with their remittances.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can anyone disenfranchise a group of people which has really been the healthcare system for our country, because the funeral system for our country, the pension system for our country. And how can that group not be important? You know, and how can we treat it, you know, in an offhand manner? So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, every citizen is important. Every citizen has something to offer. And this is the kind of culture and that we must create.
All right. Before we move on to the next one, the 10-point plan.
Yes.
I see that your manifesto has got the first 100 days,
yes,
the 100 day plan.
Mm-hmm.
If and when elected, I don't know which one would you take. Is it if or when? If and when elected, what are your most critical things that you're going to address in the first.
Yeah, well, so, you know, one of the things, in fact, one of them flows from this point that I just made about aggressively promoting and defending the constitutional rights of every Zimbabwean. We've got to actually create a civil rights division in the Attorney General's office to uphold the civil and constitutional rights of all Zimbabweans. It's got to be done right at the beginning because, you know, there's a conversation that you have to have with Zimbabweans if you're going to have an effective government. And people have to actually feel emboldened to have that conversation in the first 100 days. You've got to make sure that POSA, this whole idea that if three or four people are congregated there, you need police clearance and all that. You've got to send a signal that it's over now. That is not needed anymore. You do not need police clearance in order for you to meet and discuss the issues of your country. So, you know, you repeal POSA, you repeal all these AIPA and all of that. You repeal them in the first 100 days because you need to have that conversation with the Zimbabwean people. You need to have that conversation with other political parties, actually, about some of the things that you have to implement in the first 100 days. So, for instance, one of the things that we have said is that there must be an expansion of the pool from which a president picks his cabinet ministers. Why is that important? The important thing is, you know, we have this system in our country which is really, really terrible, even for good governance. So you have MPs who are ministers, so they're members of the executive, even as they're members of the legislature. How do they hold themselves accountable?
Capital 263.
So, you know, you were talking about some of the important things to be accomplished in the first 100 days. You know, the first thing, obviously, and this relates to the social contract I was talking about earlier, we have to engage Zimbabweans in a very, very important conversation about where we are going and some of the plans that we have. And so the very first things that Zimbabweans want to feel is that they are free to have this conversation with their leaders. So actually, point number two in our 10-point plan is really, really critical to implement within the first 100 days. Make sure that people understand that they are free. There's the, you know, repeal AIPA, get rid of POSA and all that. This whole idea that people need police clearance to just three, four, five people need police clearance to sit down and talk about the development of their country is ridiculous. And it's time that citizens, it wasn't assumed that citizens are criminals. You know, so you decriminalize the political process so that we can have some of these hard conversations. So one of the things that, you know, I mentioned is that we want, for instance, to expand the pool from which the president selects people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is that important? Because what we have right now is a crazy situation where someone is an MP and they're also in the executive. So you don't have a clear separation of powers. So how do you hold somebody who is your colleague in parliament accountable when they're also a minister and stuff like that? So some of those conversations we need to have with the citizens of Zimbabwe, with other political parties that, hey, guys, let's do something to change our constitution so we can actually have the kind of governance in this country which really protects your democratic rights and which also ensures that we can do things efficiently.
All right. I must say I'm getting your message clearly, loud and clear. It's very appealing to me. Right. But are you taking this message to the ordinary person, let's say in the rural areas? Are you taking the same message in a simpler way?
Absolutely.
And how are they receiving the message?
Absolutely. But let me say something about what you just said. You said in a simpler way. Mm-hmm. Right. you know, one of the things which has been disheartening for me mm-hmm. is the assumption by some of us that, you know, we understand things better than the ordinary Zimbabwean. You know what? There's something wrong with that. I was out in the rural areas yesterday, mm-hmm. Deep in the rural areas, Kwasadza, mm-hmm. you know. I was talking to an elderly lady, sweet, sweet mother. And I started hearing this woman actually providing her political analysis, and I was stunned. She knew what she was talking about. Look, there's something about going through 37 years of suffering that causes a person, even in the rural areas, to know that we have a leadership problem and to really also dig deep into some of these issues and be thinking about solutions. So, yeah, but having said that, obviously, we have to make sure that we can communicate what we are saying to people at the level that they understand it. And, you know, someone was asking me earlier, you know, why haven't you focused on just being in the press and stuff mm-hmm. like that? And I said, no, listen, we have wanted to be on the ground out there in the rural areas, doing what we're doing, explaining things to people. And then at the right time, actually then being in this public space called the media.
All right. You're saying Zimbabwe has got a leadership problem. Mm-hmm. So the problems that we're facing as a country, are they emanating from that? That we are facing a leadership
problem? We are facing a leadership
problem. And are you the right person, the right leader that we are looking for?
Well, that's something that people have got to judge from the things that I say and from the things that I do. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea of self-promoting and just saying, I'm the right person.
But you're marketing yourself, it's election time.
Oh, yeah. This is what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. So if people can hear what I'm saying and then make their decision about whether these ideas are the best, that's democracy. But let me go back to this whole issue of a leadership problem. You know, one thing that is really frightening right now. We have a seriously historic moment in front of us because we've had 37 years of dysfunction and we have an opportunity to rebuild our country. And one of the things that people say is, well, let's give these guys a chance. Right? Who have just come in. Let me ask you this. You know, there's something that was circulating on WhatsApp, which I thought was fantastic. And it says, Zimbabweans must ask, when $15 billion from diamonds went missing, who were mining at Chiadzwa? And the answer to that is the Zimbabwe National Army was there too. Now, then the second question is, who was the Minister of Defense there?
The current president.
The answer is Edna Mnangagwa, right? And it says, who was the commander of the army? And the answer is our current Vice President, Chiwenga.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah. Who was the Minister of Mines then?
Obed Mpof.
Right. Who was the Minister of Home Affairs then? Kembo Mohadi. So look, guys, here's the thing. Desmond Tutu said at one time, none so blind as those who wish not to see. If you choose not to see, you won't see. The facts are behind us. Now, if you're telling me, Lovejoy, that these are the people that you would feel comfortable, right, with determining what should happen in the country, Lovejoy, as somebody who has met you and, you know, and exchanged some messages with you, and I think you are really normal and so on, I would worry about you if the conclusion is that these very same people are the ones who can take this country where you really think it should be. Now, here's another thing as well. You know, who was advising Mugabe? Because a lot of people look at this and say, well, Mugabe is gone now. Let's give these people a chance. Who was, you're telling me that Mugabe was actually acting just on his own advice. Just on his own advice.
And he had criminals around him.
Yeah. Which ones? You know, so it's really, really critical. And then, you know, what happened. He was removed through the army intervening and so on. And if Mugabe was ubiquitous, he was everywhere, he knew everything that was going on, how come he was not alerted? He didn't know that this was coming and that what he was doing was dangerous for him. So there's always been in this country kind of like a parallel system going on. So it's up to you. You know, your general, if I could ask you, Lovejoy, one question I could ask you, right?
My age?
Yes.
I'm very young.
Okay.
25, actually.
You're 25. Mm-hmm. So perhaps in your adult life, you've never had a reference point in Zimbabwe of a functioning Zimbabwe.
Of course, definitely.
Yeah, so a Zimbabwe where you can actually go to a bank and apply for a loan and get a mortgage. You can actually have saved, you can actually have paid up permanent shares at some of these founders building societies that we used to have, which don't exist anymore. Beverly Building Society, and people used to have savings at POSB. So if I were to ask you at 25, are you convinced that these are the guys who would make sure that you are going to be able to build a house and finish it? You're going to be able to pay school fees for your children. If your elderly parents get sick, you're going to be able to provide healthcare. If you're convinced, then vote for them. But I am not convinced. This is a very historic moment for us. And I think that Zimbabweans need to vote the facts, not their emotions.
All right. Interesting. This is the program, The Road to 2018 Elections, with Dr. Noah Manyika, who is the president of Build Zimbabwe Alliance, one of the several political parties that are going to be contesting for the 2018 elections. I think probably we now have about 69, 70, somewhere there. We are going to be taking part in the elections. So, Dr. Manyika, you were just mentioning about the events of the November 15, historic day. Do you endorse the current government?
No, that's not my job. You see,
as a Zimbabwean citizen, as a politician.
You don't endorse a government. You choose your leaders, you know. Am I against?
Are you happy with what happened?
I'm happy with the removal of Robert Mugabe, of course.
And the new dispensation?
No. That's not my job. That's not my job. My job as a citizen is to canvass for people who will actually make sure that we have the country that we need. I'm not here to sanitize the record of people like Mnangagwa. I'm not. And, you know, to be honest with you, I refuse to do that at any interview.
All right. Yeah. Hypothetically speaking, let's say President Mnangagwa goes on to win the election.
Yeah.
And he chooses to be part of his cabinet. Would you work with him?
No, I won't. I will not be part of any.
Why is that so?
Of any cabinet? Why would I be? I mean, I'm not a ZANU-PF person.
Mm-hmm.
I am not convinced.
Inclusivity,
like I said,
maybe.
Well, inclusivity is not the answer to everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have competent government, and you have to have a government that feels for its people. So, you know, I was saying to some of our guys the other day. Let's take, for instance, the issue of what happened in Matabeleland. I saw the interviews that the president had when he was in Davos. I saw those.
Yes,
and I was very, very troubled by those interviews. Because, look, what happened in Matabeleland happened.
You're talking about the Kukra one.
Yes.
Yes.
We all know it happened, right? And this idea of quibbling with the numbers and saying, well, maybe it wasn't 20,000. Look, that's ridiculous. And also, you know what? As somebody who belongs to the tribe which did not bear the brunt of what happened in Blue Whale, some of us were complicit with our silence. And then me, myself, as a young journalist, you know, when I was training as a young journalist, one of the things that we're being trained to do was to toe the party line and to make sure that we really rubbished Joshua Nkomo and said he was a bad man and whatever the government was doing was not right. Now, you know what? We have to have the decency to say, even if we didn't actually pull the trigger and kill, we have to say we're sorry because some of our citizens are hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And what worries me is if you don't have leaders who have the decency to say that to people who lost relatives, chances are those people don't really care about someone who is suffering from poverty. You have got to be empathetic as a leader. And, you know, the fact that you say you are sorry doesn't diminish you in any way. And you know, it doesn't make you culpable for some horrendous consequences, but you know, unless you actually...
Was the president supposed to say sorry in Europe, or he's supposed to say sorry?
You say sorry anyway. I mean, didn't the Zimbabwean people watch that interview? He might have been in Europe, but the people in Zimbabwe were watching.
Probably,
the interview.
Maybe there's some more better channels to follow than just to randomly say sorry.
There is, you know, that wasn't random. I mean, you know, when you're a president and you're given that platform, the answers you give are never random.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't random. You know, and you're always preparing when you go for the interviews that those questions will come up, particularly if you know that those are the issues. I mean, I don't know if you watched some of the meetings that happened in Blue Whale and just the level of emotion when it came to the Kukra Ondi thing.
Some documentaries.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And look, it's high time if we are going to build a serious social contract in this country and move forward. In fact, that's one of the things that the president himself was saying. Let's move forward. Well, say sorry so that we can move forward. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't postpone the conversation that we must have, the very serious conversation that we must have as Zimbabweans, simply because you're on a platform which is
so in Europe. So if you were in his shoes, you'd just simply say sorry and then move on?
No. It's not just you don't stop there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the
beginning. How do you plan to solve that whole issue, the background issue?
You have got to accept the responsibility that you have as a fellow citizen. If you kept quiet when your fellow citizens were being harmed, you have got to say sorry. And sometimes citizens, you know, you'll be amazed that the reason why some of the people who are hurt end up demanding some other things is because the very basic things that we're supposed to do as human beings, just to say to each other, I feel your pain. Mm-hmm. We don't do it, you know. And we think that there are some people who don't deserve that. And that's very wrong. So that's just your starting point. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, the engagement that unfolds is something that unfolds. And, you know, you give people the right to speak. To say, you know, how they were hurt and to ask for whatever they want to ask is their democratic right. And you go through the process as a government of seeing exactly what you can do to make sure that the hurts that were inflicted on some people are addressed.
Mm. Interesting. I think that's another discussion that we would want to bring you back and maybe some other partners involved, stakeholders involved in this whole healing process. Maybe we can also ask the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission to maybe come and we talk about that. Let's talk about
the alliance. Why are you not part of an alliance?
No, you see, and that's the other thing as well. When we are actually an alliance ourselves. You saw that in our name, right? We are in alliance with the citizens of Zimbabwe want to bring about change. And, you know, never assume that one of the things about our political formation, and we've been very, very disciplined from the start, we just don't go out there and talk about the conversations we are having, strategic conversations we are having with others. And it's very tempting to do that, to score political mileage. But there are conversations which should be had and handled discreetly, and where you really go out there and find out what the other people who might want to work with you really represent, so that you don't shortchange the Zimbabwean people. And you're not just involved in this media circus sometimes. So, look, we are an alliance ourselves. We're a platform that invites every Zimbabwean. We're allied with the people of Zimbabwe. We're a platform that invites Zimbabweans who want to really bring about political change to utilize this platform.
But if
we're also not precluding other political formations who may want to be part of the Build Zimbabwe Alliance.
Okay, so let's say the MDC Alliance invites you to be part of their alliance. Would you go? Would you?
No, everything needs to be on the basis of what is best for the Zimbabwean people.
Okay.
What is it that we can accomplish? You know, I used to say this at the beginning because people were talking about this grand coalition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I would say, what is grand about it? Are you just talking about numbers? Or you're talking about something that would truly inspire the Zimbabwean people to participate in the political process, to vote in massive numbers. And beyond that, to continue being engaged in the process of building our country. That's a grand coalition. Mm. So I think, you know, just being coming together doesn't mean that you're going to win an election. Mm-hmm. Just coming together doesn't mean that you're going to mobilize enough people to participate in the election. So,
speaking of numbers, I was doing my math. My math is not that bad. Mm. So I think about 2.3 or 2.5, somewhere there, million votes are needed for one to win the presidential elections. Mm-hmm. Do you have the numbers?
No, that's why you campaign. You don't come to an election and you say, I've got 2.6 million people in my bank, which is why I've always found it ridiculous when people say to you, oh, you know, you might split the vote, and I ask them, which vote?
Yeah.
Which one? Which vote? So I guess all these other political parties have a pocket of people that they have, you know, and they're afraid that I'm going to come in. It's ridiculous. That's the whole point of campaigning. That's the whole point of democracy. You present to the people your plans, your candidates, and people make a judgment and they say, we are going to vote for you. So, yeah, here's what I can say.
Mm-hmm.
We are confident that we're going to have
the numbers.
The numbers.
The 2.345.
We are confident that we're going to have the numbers. And we don't take that for granted, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's why we work. We work very hard. I have an incredible, incredible campaign team.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very disciplined, stays on task, does not get distracted by all the hullabaloo that's going on around them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it can look like something that disadvantages us. But you know what? We know where the votes are, and we're going where the votes are, and we're going to work there. They're not on social media.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The majority of votes are not on social media. So we go where the votes are, and you're going to be seeing more and more of that coming into the public now that we're doing open meetings.
All right. The president said we are going for an election before July. Mm-hmm. That means we have got about 6 or less months before the elections.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at ZEC. They don't have a commissioner right now. A chairperson?
Chairperson.
Right. What's your take on that? Are they in a position to be delivering a credible, a free and fair election with where we are right now and the time that's left between now and the elections?
Well, you see, this is the thing that we're fighting against, isn't it? Mm-hmm. This whole idea that one political party monopolizes the building of processes and structures to deliver our freedom. And that's been the problem right from the beginning, you know. So we continue pressing for them to make the changes that are necessary. But look, at the end of the day, it's the pressure from the Zimbabwean people, the pressure of the Zimbabwean people turning out in exceedingly great numbers to actually vote. That, I think, will be the ally of all of us who want to bring about change to press for the right outcome. Now, let me also add here something that we all seem to kind of overlook sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The 2008 elections were stolen.
All right. Yeah, that's public knowledge.
That's public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
By who? Who were the people who actually made sure that Mugabe remained in power, the current president in the military establishment. We know that. Again, as I said, Desmond Tutu says, if you choose not to see, then you're blind, right? None so blind as those who choose not to see. So, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, we are not necessarily trusting the structures that are there or the people that are superintending it. We know that they will try to do everything. What's that?
And I'm saying the best is to, you know, where you're coming from.
Yeah. Well, you know, so we don't trust them, you know, but we trust the Zimbabwean people. And we also trust that Zimbabwean people are ready to fight for their vote to be heard. And we're doing everything in our power to make that happen.
All right. As we try to wrap up the program, I know you're a busy man, probably have got various engagements. There have been some calls for electoral reforms, especially from the opposition front. They want electoral reforms before the election, but it seems as if the ruling party or the government of the day is not budging.
Mm.
We have a problem.
Yes.
How do you come in? How do you plan to solve that?
You know, Lovejoy, I love that question. You know, that question makes it so easy for me to reiterate my earlier point. And these are the people who are supposed to give a second chance? I mean, really? Seriously? Because it's obvious to you as a journalist, they're not budging, right? You know, it's obvious to... And this is one of the things that really, really worries me about some of the people that we thought were with us in the fight for democracy in this country. People from countries with long established traditions of democracy who are so giddy about this presidency and are saying, yeah, you know what? People need to shut up and give this presidency a chance. Really? Really? I think these are some of the things that we need to expose and to shame people who think that we Africans would do a lot of harm to ourselves if we have full democracy. And that shouldn't be acceptable to us. The other thing is that, and I say this to young people, I appeal to young people, and I say, this is your moment. Maybe you don't have a reference of a country that fully functions, but this idea that is not good enough. You owe it to yourself to fight for full democracy in this time and to actually be part of the leadership change that has to happen in our country.
Mm. All right. Leadership change. Okay, fine. I think I asked that. Then foreign policy. What's your foreign policy like?
That's another question that I love. You know, what is our foreign policy like? Do you know that every country really must function in the best interest of its people? So what does China do? China thinks ahead and it says, hey, you know what? I want the inside track when it comes to relationships with African countries. So I'm going to build the headquarters of the African Union in them and give them a gift. And the moment I do that, I have an inside track when it comes to relationships with them. If I want deals, of course I'm going to get those deals. See, that's astute foreign policy making. You ask yourself, what is it in the best interest of my people? I must have the relationships with other countries that advantage my people. So the Chinese do that, and they do that at our expense. It's not just the Chinese who do that. It's the Americans, it's the British, it's every country which has astute leadership. And our foreign policy must start with what is in the best interest of our people? What are the relationships that can benefit our people, that enable us, for instance, to be able to be highly productive in the agricultural sector, that enable us to really beneficiate our mining resources, that enable us to have markets outside there. What are those relationships like? And one of the things that we have said in our manifesto, for instance, you will notice that where we had a Ministry of Foreign Affairs before, we call ours Ministry of International Cooperation and Trade.
Okay.
And
More like Americans?
Yeah, we want to change the mindset of those people who are foreign policy practitioners in this country. And we also want to make sure that we have shrewd diplomats everywhere who understand that they're not just political representatives or guardians of past relationships that our government had during the liberation struggle, which really don't benefit our people now. We need people who advocate for our country from an economic perspective. I'm actually trained myself in international relations and diplomacy. Uh-huh. And one of the things that we learned is the importance of what they call IBD, or international business diplomacy. Mm-hmm. You know, where you really look at your diplomats and you say, listen, your job right here is to make sure that you can get the best business deals for Zimbabwe. That's the important.
Maybe we still at that. There's been talk about foreign direct investment, attracting investors. What kind of investment does Zimbabwe need between now and maybe the end of this year? the most critical investment, what kind of investment?
That between now and the end of this year, yes. So you're talking about the post-election period as well. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. We need all kinds of investment. We need to be able to open up our space so that people can actually feel confident to come and invest and you know, create companies so that we can have jobs. So we need all kinds of investment. We need people, we need money, we need everything, you know. But let me segue into this. The idea that, you know, people will just come and bring money and we sign all these mega deals.
And run in debt.
And run up our debt again, you know, is really not thinking straight. This is one of the reasons why we need the conversation with the Zimbabwean people, hard conversation, and say, look, we're not necessarily going to accept everything that looks like help that is offered to Zimbabwe. We are going to be very judicious and we're going to sit down there and think through how does this deal work for our good. So there are a lot of build and operate and transfer deals that have been signed by African countries where a country like China comes in and gets this deal and is building a highway. They build it, but they bring all the people that build from China. They bring their wheelbarrows. They import all the materials that you need from their own countries and so on. They operate it, in other words, they make money from it for throughout the life of that deal. And then they transfer it to you when, in fact, now it actually needs to be rebuilt. We have a history in this country of a government that has made bad deal after bad deal after bad deal, hence Chiadzwa. Yeah. So when it comes to investment, you've got to have people who know what they're talking about and who are very, very serious in terms of engaging with our partners to make sure that it advantages our country.
On the day that you launched your manifesto, MDC Vice President, that's Vachamisa, he said, President Trump, President of the United States, Mr. Trump, you promised them $15 billion to run the economy if and when they win the election. And there's been talk about some other people were saying maybe Zimbabwe needs $100 billion to recover the economy. In your assessment, how much do we need to resuscitate this badly damaged economy?
Well, you know what? Putting those numbers, you know, again, it goes back to what I just said earlier. You really have to be very careful about, and you know what, I'm not necessarily addressing what Chamisa said because they've made their own assessment, you know, and they're having their conversations. That's not us. But here's what I truly believe. If you build a truly democratic environment where there's a predictable business environment and you have leaders of integrity, the money that you need will come in, you know, whatever you need will come in. If people can trust the investment climate, the money that you need will come in. If you make common sense policy, investment policy, the money will come in. If you have the rule of law, the money will come in. So, I'm not going to go out there and entice people to support me because I say, well, you know, I know that we need however many billions we need to do it. All I'm saying is, allow the Zimbabwean people to participate freely and fairly in the election, have common sense policies, remove all these ridiculous laws that we have, and make people feel confident that they can invest in Zimbabwe. And by the way, the one group that we really have to make sure feels comfortable about investing in Zimbabwe is the citizen of Zimbabwe. And those people who are in the informal sector have to feel like they're going to be supported. There's going to be inflows of capital that are going to come, that are going to be available for the guy who at CSO is making window frames and doors. So it's not just, look, we're not opening this up for the sake of people who are outside. Non-Zimbabweans who want to invest. We're opening this up for Zimbabweans to work in partnership with those people who would come in here and invest in good faith.
All right, quickly, election and violence. In your campaign trails, have you encountered any form of violence? Have you been intimidated, your members?
Well, you know, I was very disturbed this morning because I was kind of happy that up to now, we were not going through difficulties as far as that is concerned. But I was disturbed this morning. I mean, we've had some people beaten up before the November incident. But I was hoping that we have gone past that. But I got a message this morning, actually, that there are some of our people in Glenora who were being terrorized by ZANU-PF
people.
These
are members of
of our party. Yeah. And you know what? That is really, really unfortunate and something that we condemn in the strongest of terms. And I hope it is not going to escalate.
All right. If you were to give me one thing that you like about ZANU-PF and MDC,
Nah, that's not my job. I'm not here to campaign for ZANU-PF or the MPC.
Just one, Dr. Manu, don't you think maybe they've done right?
No, that's not my job. Mm-hmm. That's not my job. You know, my job is to canvass for the Zimbabwean people to be given the absolute best chance to participate in determining the direction of their country and building it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not here to...
Fine.
If you were to ask me, okay, now let me say this. If you were to ask me and say, in the last 37 years, are there some things that have happened which have benefited the Zimbabwean people? Of course, I mean, you know, you can't say everything that has happened in the last 37 years has been bad. No, you can't. You can't say that. So, look, and some of the things which were absolutely justified in our country, say, you know, land reform, the reason why some of us have difficulties with the way land reform, with it is the way it was done. It's not land reform itself. And we don't begrudge those people who had legitimate need for land, who were given land. But the idea that you kill anyone who owns a farm or you send some people to set things on fire and so on, that is wrong. One. Two, the idea that this continues being a racial thing up to
white
now.
White farmers, black farmers.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And we condemn that in the strongest of terms. So, you know, but the people need land. Of course, there are people who need land.
So you support land reform?
Of course, you know, but I don't support the way it was done. You know, it could have been done differently. And going forward, I think we have to speedily get to a point where this is not a racial thing. You know, you're not a good farmer because you're black. Mm-hmm. You're not a good farmer because you're white. You're a good farmer because you're competent in farming. And we need to make sure that we have the people who know how to farm getting the farms. You don't become a good farmer because you're a government minister. You know, you don't become a good farmer because you're a top civil servant and you have access to this. So,
all right. In just 1 minute, Dr. Manyika, sell yourself to the people of Zimbabwe. Why should they vote for Dr. Noah Manyika as an individual? Mm-hmm. Why should they? Speak to my gogo who is in Mount Darwin there. Speak to her right now.
Yeah, I would say to your gogo who is in Mount Darwin that, I'm your son. and you know, that may sound like a joke, but it is high time that the people of Zimbabwe started entrusting their future in their children, you know, in their sons, in those people who they have invested in. You know, all our parents have invested a lot in our education. The one important thing for a Zimbabwean family, sometimes even beyond having food, is making sure that your children have gotten an education. So make your investment worthwhile. Vote for the children that you have invested in and who you know actually, you know, have the competencies and skills and, you know, to do the things that we need in this country. And I want to believe I'm one of them. Look, you know, the way that I sell myself is not by saying I'm the only one. Mm-hmm. That's the worst thing it's so prideful to say that. There are many Zimbabweans out there who are competent enough, and there are many Zimbabweans who are even presenting themselves who are competent enough. Look, democracy is about you deciding from a plate of choices. Who do I think is the best person? So we have done our work. We have presented our manifesto. I'm here talking about my ideas. If you like my ideas, vote for me. If you think I would not be good for this country, don't vote for me. You know? But if you believe that the ideas I have presented, and if you also believe that some of the things that I've addressed, which are true, you know, are true,
okay.
You know, then make the right choice and vote Pabizai Papu.
So there we have it. That's the Biza. The Biza is spoken. The white horse, as he calls himself, is not the dark horse. Yeah, that's Dr. Noah Manyika. He was sharing with us his ideologies, his manifesto, his plans for the elections, what he wants to offer the nation, his hopes for the nation, his aspirations for the nation. There you have it. If you feel like you want to vote for him, there's the man, there's the Biza, there's the white horse. That's the problem. The program, the road to 2018 elections. If you'd like to take part in this program, remember to go on our social media platforms. That's @26Richard on Twitter, @26Richard on Facebook, or get in touch with me on my line. That's 071-666-865. If you think you have got any discussion to talk about from this interview, don't hesitate to use the hashtag that we're using, ZimVotes18. That's the program. My name is Love Jim Tongiza. Join me in other programs.
And now. Capital 263.